All right, it's back by popular demand, Fast Track. We do this every day at this time. I got questions for Ramona. She's got them for me. They don't necessarily have to do with sports. They oftentimes do. We always start with a ceremonial coin flip. Ramona, since you attended the Dodger game last night and you're attending the Laker game tonight, heads, everything goes off without a hitch. It's easy to get in, easy to get out. Tails, we're going to go through some growing pains. Call it in the air.
Got to go through some growing pains.
You think so?
I just think it's inevitable.
I don't. Jorge, who wins?
John wins on this one.
Oh, thank goodness. All right, Momo. Okay. I'm going first. There is no advantage with that. Okay. Michael's here, too, and this is a good question for Michael. Steph Curry, guys, is the hottest player in the NBA. In seven games this month, Curry is averaging 39.7 rebounds and 4 assists a game. He's also shooting 46% from three. Steph went off again last night in Oklahoma City, scoring 42 points in a Warriors win. He had 11 threes in just 29 minutes. Whoa. He was asked after the game if he thinks he can one day beat Klay Thompson's record of 14 threes in one game. Steph says he thinks he can break that record, but wasn't sure about Klay's other NBA record, scoring 37 in one quarter. Ooh. Curry did have 25 and went 8-for-8 in the third quarter last night, but here's what he said when asked if he can beat either one of Klay's records.
His 37-point quarter is even crazier because I had 25 tonight and just seemed like I was, you know, invincible out there. This dude had 12 more points and the same amount of time. So that was crazy in and of itself. But then the 14 threes, like I had 11 and felt like I couldn't miss. So I think it's gettable, but we'll see.
All right, Michael, let's start with you. Do you agree that Steph probably can get Klay's record of 14 threes in one game, but he can't break the 37-point quarter? Do you agree with him?
I think, Ramona, Lindsay, that he's capable of both. He has to start off hot in a quarter, like get the first 15 points, which that's only five threes.
Yeah.
He's very capable of doing that. So 38 points I could see him doing by staying hot and they keep feeding him. What ticks me off about the 14-3 record is he can get that too. But what made me mad about that is Klay didn't play the fourth quarter.
Yep, he didn't. Steph mentioned that last night, that he only did in three quarters.
If Klay would have played the fourth quarter, he could have got probably 20 threes, and then I would have said that was probably untouchable. But, yeah, 14 threes, I'm surprised Steph hasn't broken it already.
Well, Ramona, the great thing about it is that before Klay set the record, Steph had it. Steph had – so I almost think that that's how this particular record should go. It should be a – battle between the Splash Brothers just to see who comes out on top. By the way, I don't think either one of them has finished with their career high in threes. I think Klay somehow will have a game where he has more than 14.
He better.
And I think Steph will too.
He's had 2 years off. My advice is when you come back next year,
shoot,
and keep on shooting and make up for the 2 years you just missed.
Ramona, what do you think? Do you agree with Steph that he can get Klay's 14 threes but probably not his 37-point quarter?
I actually agree with him. I think 37 and a quarter is one of those ones that's probably going to stand forever. I mean, Michael, that's crazy that he scored 37 and a quarter.
I know. But what if Steph, say, gets...
That's crazy.
But what if Steph gets 18 points in the first 4 minutes of a quarter, which is possible? That's six threes.
Well, you heard him say it, though, Michael, that he said he was white hot and couldn't miss. He went 8-for-8 from the field in the third quarter, and he looked up at the end, and he had 25. Klay had 12 more.
And you got to remember,
averaging more than 3 points a minute.
And I don't want to sound too much like
that's crazy.
Yeah, I don't want to sound too much like LeVar here, Ramona. But the thing about that 37-point quarter that nobody really pays attention to, Klay didn't score until like 9.5 minutes left in the third. He did that in 9.5 minutes, not 12 minutes.
Yeah, that's the only time, Ramona, that happened when Michael and I were on the Lakers plane. Yeah. We were waiting to take off. And Michael was watching on his phone, and I've told the story many times. It was one of the funnest days of my career watching Michael watch Klay because, you know, we all know Michael could talk about anything. You could say, Michael, give me 3 minutes on gravel, and he could do it. But that night, Michael, you were rendered speechless.
Yeah.
You didn't know what to say when he kept making all those shots.
I was sitting next to Patina Shore, and I can't, you know, I don't use, you know, I don't curse, but I even I had to say what WTF? No, WTF is
going
WTF is going on here when he got to 25 points?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. All right, Momo, it's to you.
All right, John, I found this story. I found this story and I thought of you because I know how devoted you are to car chases and anything.
Yes, I want to start a car chase channel.
Type behavior, okay?
Yeah.
A driver in Daytona Beach did not let a rising drawbridge stop them from reaching their destination. Traffic camera video, and I'll send you the link, shows the driver speeding through the drawbridge crossing. So, like, you know, think about it like the train tracks. The crossing
right,
goes
right
down.
Out of the Fast and Furious.
He goes right through the pole there. He breaks the arm and drives over the bridge as it begins to rise. The car briefly caught a bit of air before landing on the other side and driving off to his destination. Yes, he made it. Police have the traffic camera footage. They know who the driver is and they're looking for him and they're gonna charge him with something. Okay, John. What is the most reckless thing that you have attempted while driving, just in honor of this guy who drove across the drawbridge, Dukes of Hazzard style?
Okay, so when I moved to Texas, I had an Isuzu Impulse. That's all I could afford back in those days. And I was 21 years old, and one day, I had been warned. They say, hey, just because you're in Texas, you're from California, be careful. The roads can get very icy, and you got to drive slow. And I said, okay. So I'm driving along, and I go, these roads feel fine to me. So I speed up a little more and a little more.
No.
And then, you know, sure enough, I'm going like, you know, I don't know, 50, 60.
Yeah.
And I stepped on the brake for some reason, and my car immediately started doing donuts, uncontrollable donuts. And I had my seatbelt on. I did 3 360s, and I was just waiting to hit either another car or a wall, but I knew it was going to end. I knew it was going to end badly. And it was like at 9 o'clock at night, there were other cars on the road. I said, okay, just hope you don't get T-boned and get to the side of the road as soon as your car stops spinning. And I spun three times. And other than the fact that my car was facing the wrong way when it stopped, I didn't hit anything. I didn't hit another car.
Ooh, wow.
I didn't hit the median. I didn't hit the wall. I totally lucked out.
Wow.
And I just turned my car around. And for the rest of my stay in Texas, I drove very slow.
Yeah.
Wow.
How about you? Have you ever been in any crazy situations like that?
My best story is probably when I tried to be a member of the paparazzi outside of David Beckham's house.
Okay.
Like, basically, I wanted to do a story about the paparazzi covering David Beckham when he first got to L.A.
Right.
And I'm a terrible paparazzi, okay? I've learned this about myself now. But at the time, I thought, I'm going to go to where his house is. I'm going to hang out. I'm going to meet the people, and I'm going to see how they do their jobs. So they all told me, they said, well, essentially what happens is we stand outside the house all day, wait for them to leave, and then run to our cars and chase after them. I'm like, okay. So that's exactly what happened. We're literally mid-sentence.
No way.
They see some movement. Everybody runs to their cars. And I'm like, okay, I got to go.
How many photographers roughly? Like more than two?
20. At least 20 of them. Yes. Okay. Over there by UCLA. Do you know where this is?
Yeah.
Right off Sunset, back up in there by – so – I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to get to be part of this. This is awesome. So I get in there. First of all, I'm a total idiot. I park I face on the wrong side. So I had to do like a 3-point turn to go the right way towards Sunset. I mean, I'm like so slow. So now I'm at the back of the line. Everybody else is facing the right way. And they get out and it's the light at Sunset. And I want to say three cars went through on the red. They made that left onto the red. And I'm like car number 5. And I'm like, oh man, am I gonna do this? Am I gonna do it? And I start to gun it. I start to gun it, and I just totally lost my nerve. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, that was like, your one day as a member of the paparazzi.
Yeah, I mean,
that's funny.
I went through stop signs. I ran two stop signs. I went around the curve, and I was like, okay, this is, I can't do the light. It's sunset. It's just, it's not worth it. I had got my story. That's it.
Wow. All right. It's to me. Okay. Guys, when the Masters started last week, they had an honorary ceremony for Lee Elder, the first black man ever to play at Augusta. Lee participated in a first tee ceremony with Jack Nicklaus and three-time winner Gary Player. Player's caddy was his son, Wayne, who stood behind his dad throughout the ceremony, and you could clearly see him. Player is part owner of a company called Encore. They make golf balls. During the entire ceremony, Wayne Player can be seen holding up a box of Encore golf balls in what can best be described as a guerrilla marketing tactic. Of course, since it's the Masters, a ton of people noticed. And now this is a thing. Wayne Player is in trouble, especially since this was a ceremony honoring a trailblazing African-American golfer at a place that has some not-so-great racial history. The CEO of Encore says this was not planned and that Wayne Player acted on his own. There are some reports that Wayne has been fined, other reports that he's been banned from Augusta. All that's kind of expected. Augusta's uptight, and they ban people every day. But here's my question. Do you think we're all being played here? I had never even heard of Encore golf balls before this. Didn't even know they existed. Now everybody's talking about them. Did Wayne Player do this on purpose, knowing he would get in trouble, knowing it would cause a stir, but creating tons of free awareness? What do you guys think?
How old is he?
Old, like 40s or 50s.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he did.
He took advantage of it.
Yeah, took advantage.
Hey, Ramona, like, they got advertising all over their shirts and hats. Big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this guy didn't pay for it.
It's smart.
Yeah.
It wasn't the best. It wasn't the best moment for him to do that, though, because
he wasn't in church. Right, he's on a golf course.
But Michael, they think it's a church. Augusta thinks it's a church.
That's right.
They were honoring. You know, it was supposed to be like an honorable moment.
And if he just if he didn't like flash it in front of Lee Elder, he just had it in the background. It's no big deal.
Yeah, he's holding it up like you would hold up an American Express card if you were doing a commercial. you guys should watch it. It's pretty brutal.
It's a golf course, not a cathedral.
I think most people reacted like Lindsay did. It's a bad look.
Yeah, please.
It's a bad look.
It didn't bother me.
Everybody, but you got you talking about it.
Yeah, they got you talking about it. But then they shouldn't advertise.
No publicity is bad publicity.
Did they advertise in the Masters, Ireland?
No.
They don't advertise in the Masters?
No.
What do you mean, no? There are no commercials in the Masters?
Well, no, they do three commercials an hour, but this company, Encore, didn't pay for
it. I'm talking about anybody. Anybody?
Whatever you guys find is cheaper than that commercial would have been.
That's
right. You know? Exactly. Okay, Ramona, time for one more.
All right,
more.
I got one. The Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame has announced its list of Hall of Famers scheduled to present the 2020 class of honorees. Kobe Bryant is the most notable name going into the Hall of Fame this year, and as expected, Michael Jordan will present Kobe Bryant for induction into the Hall of Fame.
Good.
He's also presenting Kim Mulkey, who's the women's coach at Baylor there. So he's going to be inducting two people. John, Michael gave one of the best eulogies I've ever heard, and I think all of us heard at Kobe's celebration of life. He also gave one of the more notable speeches on his own induction into the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Never seen anything like it. He just basically called out everyone who he's still bitter about.
Well, have you seen Allen Iverson's
It says the same way?
Oh, it's great. No, he didn't call it, but he was just so great. He was just so pure and just unrehearsed.
What do we think? Can Michael top either of these speeches when he inducts Kobe Bryant into the Hall of Fame?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Michael's good at speaking. And he'll say the right things, and he'll be emotional. So it's going to be a great moment.
I'm glad he's doing that for Kobe.
Yeah.
I almost want to say they should get somebody else to do Kim, just so it makes Kobe's more exclusive. But maybe he had agreed to do Kim's first. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's interesting. I kind of there's a part of me that wanted Phil to do Kobe's induction, right? Just to be. But Phil's done a few of these already.
Right.
Or Jerry West. Jerry West is the one who discovered him.
Yeah, that would be a good one, too. Yeah. I mean, I like that Michael's going to do it. I always just think he gave one of the greatest eulogies. I don't know how you can top it.
Shaq was good, too.
Yeah.
Shaq was great.
I don't know how he's going to top this, but he certainly has with every other speech he's given. So yeah. This will be a must-see.
Do you know when that is? It's not the normal time, right?
It's usually August. I think they're
going to do it before the end of the finals. I think they're going to do it.
Early. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good class. Isaiah Thomas.
No, they always do that.
Tim Duncan.
They always do it in September.
I think they moved it, but I'll look it up.
They did. Okay.
Yeah. I think they moved it because, Michael, they have two classes this year.
Oh, all right. That's right.
So I think they're going to do one I'll look it up. That's it for Fast Track. Michael Thompson's here. Ramona's here. We're leading you up to Spock and the Jock pregame and then Lakers Celtics tonight. Coming up next, Jackie McMullen, who's been covering basketball in Boston for as long as I can remember. If there's anybody you want to talk Lakers Celtics with, it's Jackie Mack, and she'll join us next, 710 ESPN. All right.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mason in Ireland today. It's Momo in Ireland. Ramona Shelburne in for Mace this week. And it's Lakers-Celtics night. As I talked about in the first segment, there is nothing like Lakers-Celtics. It's my favorite NBA day of the year. To me, it's Ali Frazier, regardless of what the records are, who's playing. These two teams both hate each other and respect each other at the same time. And that doesn't always happen. And to help us talk about that is Jackie McMullen, who's one of the great sports writers ever to come out of Boston. There are a lot of good sports writers in Boston, and Jackie's been part of that magical staff that all kind of came out of the same paper. Jackie, thank you for doing this. How are you?
I'm great today. How are you guys?
It's Lakers-Celtics. It can't be. By the way, let me start there, Jackie. This wasn't always a rivalry. It was very one-sided for a lot of years. The Celtics kind of had everybody's number in the 60s, but especially the Lakers, who they tended to beat up on in the finals and, you know, basically beat up on everywhere. When did it flip? Did it flip with Bird Magic, which is, I know, something you've done a book about? Was it before that? When did these two become Ali Frazier?
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd have to point to Bird Magic, because up to that point, it reminded me of the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry. The Red Sox thought it was a rivalry. The Yankees just thought it was a walkover. And it was similar to that in the 60s when the Celtics were just breaking Jerry West and Elgin Baylor's heart every single time they met in the finals. But, you know, Magic strikes first in 80. Of course, he doesn't play Bird to win that championship. He plays the Sixers. Then Bird wins in 81. And then we're off to the races. And the Lakers got the better end of that. Magic got the better end of that. And since then, I think it's pretty obvious that the Lakers, they're the ones who have got the lopsided docket now in recent history.
Jack, it's interesting watching this rivalry over the years, because there really has been a clash in the finals almost every decade, right? If you look at it, almost every decade, there's been some kind of clash in the finals. We were thinking this Celtics team, and we've been thinking that they're just really close to breaking through. They get to the Eastern Conference Finals a couple of years ago. Where are they now? Are they closer? Are they further away? Like, I can't tell throughout the season. They've been 500, but now they're playing better. Are they anywhere close to breaking through again?
No, they're further away. They, you know, if you look, they went after Kyrie Irving. Who wouldn't?
Yeah.
I would have too.
Yeah.
He's just a transcendent talent. But it didn't work out there, and he walked. Then during that time with Kyrie Irving, you grabbed Gordon Hayward as a free agent. And, you know, one thing about the Celtics history, they were never great about attracting free agents. And they got Gordon Hayward to come. They got Al Horford to come. And then they both left as free agents themselves with, again, nothing to show for it. So you have two young players in Tatum and Brown that I think any team would love to build around. But obviously you need more than that when you start talking about a championship. So as I look at them now, I thought Hayward was a huge blow when he walked. I think there was some frustration among the fan base because particularly during the playoffs last year. People were judging him when he was playing hurt. He shouldn't have played at all. He had a bad ankle, shouldn't have even played on it, tried to, didn't look good. Everybody's like, yeah, well, don't let the door hit you on the way out. Well, guess what? He was their best facilitator. He was that big wing defender that you need in tight games. You know that, Ramona. Wing defender is the most important position in basketball now. And so that's why the defensive numbers dropped off. That's why the offense was stagnant, because Gordon Hayward was their best passer. Now, I think they've gotten past that now. I like the pickup of Fournier, though he's barely played for them. I think what's happened recently is Tatum, he definitely had some post-COVID stuff. You mean, he revealed to us the other day he's still using an inhaler.
Ooh,
so I think he's rounding back into form. Marcus Smart was out for quite a while. He's, of course, a big part of their defensive identity. So they're a very nice team, but they're not going to be winning any championships anytime soon, at least not in my estimation.
Lakers-Celtics tonight. We have the game for you on ESPN LA. Pregame at 5:30, tip-off at 7. We're talking to ESPN's Jackie McMullen, who covers the NBA from Boston, but Jackie covers the whole league. Let me ask you this, Jackie. The criticism you'll hear sometimes about the Celtics is, after a big name moves, they always say, well, we were in it, but we didn't get them. In other words, they fairly or unfairly have a reputation of being gun-shy when it comes to making the big move. You mentioned Kyrie, which was the one big move they made. Is that a fair criticism, that Danny and that front office, for whatever reason, won't pull the trigger when other teams will on big-name guys?
I do think it's a fair criticism. Now, what we'll never know is what really was said behind closed doors, what was really offered behind closed doors. You know, I think Danny's a very aggressive GM. He tried to get involved with Jimmy Butler. He was involved with Paul George. He was involved, tried to be involved with Anthony Davis, but as Ramona can tell you, because she's the one that reported it, that was never, ever, ever going to happen. So I think and sometimes in these cases, Danny aggressively goes after these players, but perhaps the message is, you know, I don't want to go there. And that's been a problem that's plagued the Celtics in recent years, is getting guys to come and then keeping them there. So I think the criticism is partly valid. I have to say it is.
Jackie Mack, Michael Thompson here. I got to jump in since you're here. The queen of
Hello,
the NBA.
Hello, Michael. How are you, dear?
Well, you're nice not going to like me after this, but can I put you on the spot?
Oh, no. What are you going to do?
The Maiden of Massachusetts. That's Jackie McMillan, everybody. Me and Ireland talk about this all the time. You know, this is like barbershop talk. At 17 NBA titles each, which is the greatest NBA franchise historically, Celtics or Lakers?
Well, so this is kind of a semantics thing. Are you counting the Minneapolis Lakers, which you are, I guess?
Of course,
right?
Yeah.
So the purists would say the Los Angeles Lakers should win their own 17, which, by the way, I think they will. But in recent history, how can I argue anything except for to say that it's the Lakers? Here's my favorite game, Michael. Mm-hmm. Who's the greatest player to play for both franchises?
Oh, that's a great question.
I'm going to put you on the spot now.
Oh, that's easy.
That a girl.
That's easy for me, because I think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is the greatest player in history, so I'm saying Kareem.
No, but she said to play for both.
No, he didn't play for the Celtics. I'm saying the greatest player that played for the Celtics and the Lakers.
Oh, okay. That would have to be Rajon.
Rajon Rondo?
Yeah, because he
Michael, I'm shocked that you did not pick the person who...
Michael. Rick Fox, I know Rick.
Yeah, Rick Fox is your hero.
Hey, Rick is my hero. He's the best-looking Celtic and Laker ever. No question about that.
Yeah, he is. I'll go with that.
Yeah,
But
Rondo...
The only ones to win... Rondo's a good answer, and Rondo and the Clyde Lovett are the answer for the only two that won championships.
Yeah.
With both franchises. But remember, Shaq played for the Celtics. Did you know that?
But come on. Shaq looked like Chris Farley by the time he played for the Celtics.
You know what? I disagree with you. You know what? Everybody likes to make Shaq a punchline in Boston. I'm telling you right now, if he hadn't hurt that Achilles in 2010, they're the champions. The numbers were unbelievable with Shaq on the court versus off the court. Right then, analytics wasn't making a lot of noise back then, but all the numbers, that's why one of the reasons they traded Perkins was because the numbers with Shaq in the starting lineup versus him off the floor were startling. Mm-hmm. They were a dominant team that year with Shaq on the court, but then he got hurt.
All right, Jackie, before we let you go, everybody under the sun is projecting a Lakers-Brooklyn final. Are you in that club? Do you think when it all washes out that we're looking at Lakers-Nets at the end?
Well, if Anthony Davis can recover fully, yes. But I will tell you, and it doesn't matter now, sadly, I was very, very bullish on what the Denver Nuggets were doing and the continuity they had. And Michael Porter and Jamal Murray were all ascending at the very right moment. But I'm just still in mourning over what happened to poor Jamal Murray, because I thought that Denver team was coming on. But yes, I do think it's Lakers-Brooklyn. However, I think the East in particular is going to be super fun because we're all overlooking Milwaukee and Giannis, which I really believe is a mistake, because I do think Jrue Holiday has changed the tone of that team, the tenor of that team, and the toughness of that team.
Jackie Mack, I always say this. You've seen them all. You've seen all the greats. Not that you're old, but you're a historian, just like me and John Ireland and Ramona. I've always said this about Joel Embiid. For a guy his size, I'm talking about a man his size, he is the most gifted center we've ever seen in the NBA.
Yes. I agree.
Yeah. Really? I agree. More than Olajuwon?
Forward more, right?
Yeah.
And Olajuwon was special. And look, Shaq, again, I mean, I'm more bullish on Shaq than you guys, I guess. Very, very gifted for a guy his size, the kind of things he could do. Just look at his dance moves. But I think Embiid is special. I think if Embiid hadn't got hurt these last, he missed those 10 games, I think the MVP race would have been super interesting.
Yeah.
I think it would have been those two neck and neck down to the finish, because he was having a phenomenal year on both ends, and that's what separates him from Jokic. Embiid obviously is a better defender than Jokic is. I don't think you can argue with Jokic at this point with these few games left because of all the injuries of all the great players.
Yeah, we've never seen a guy his size handle the ball like a guard and then shoot threes the way he shoots.
And it's probably true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Effortlessly, right?
Yeah.
Effortlessly. He's special. He's a great guy, too. He's a great and great personality. He's fun to be around.
Best personality in the NBA.
Yeah, just got to keep him healthy. That's the whole thing. Hey, Jackie, thank you. We know you get a ton of requests to do stuff like this. Thank you for saying yes to ours. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Are you kidding me? You think I'm ever going to say no to Ramona?
That's true.
That's my girl.
She will hunt you down. We know that.
Well,
she
also,
is relentless.
It's Lakers-Celtics. Like, if there's ever one time Jackie's going to say yes,
there you
it's
go.
Gonna be Lakers-Celtics,
there you go.
Right? This
All
isn't
right.
just on random Tuesday. Hey, Jackie, can you come on my show?
It's all good, man. All good.
Jackie, thank you. Be good. All right. You too. Bye. All right. Coming up, Ramona was at Dodger Stadium last night. The Dodgers are now 10-2. They're on pace to start the season 42-8, which would be the best record ever after 50 games. We'll get into the Dodgers next. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. They played this last night. Ramona was there at Dodger Stadium. The Dodgers win again. They are 10-2. So I haven't been to a baseball game in a couple of years, Ramona. What was it like?
Wow. Man, baseball is my happy place. Do you know that about me? It's totally my happy place.
And you grew up playing it.
Oh, God. I went there in that first bite of the Dodger dog. It was so great.
Now, we should you went as a fan, right?
Last
night you sat in the stands?
Sat in the stands, bought some tickets, sat in the stands. You know, and honestly, I think it's better because there's no lines for anything. There's not that many people there. It felt totally safe. There was no one around me, I went with a friend and it was like, no one around. You don't feel like people are on top of you, right? And so we all have our masks on. When you went to go get a Dodger dog, there was a little line, but not like you stayed spaced out and stuff. I thought it was great. And normally when you go, you got to fight the traffic to get in, fight the traffic to get out. Nope, just fine. In and out, no problem.
Okay, so it was because of the limited fans you had. Like, my big complaint about Dodger Stadium is it takes me forever to get out of there. But you found it. And so did you go by yourself or did you go with other people?
With a friend, yeah.
Okay,
with a friend.
So you went with a friend. Now, how do they set up the social distancing? Like, how close were you to other fans?
So in your pod, our seat, there was people near us, but I would say it was at least 6 feet, It was at least 6 feet from any other pod.
Were the Go ahead.
All throughout the stadium. So all throughout the stadium, like there might be somebody in the row in front of you or behind you, but they won't be like right in front of you. They'll be off to the side of you.
Right.
Right. Do you see what I'm saying? So like they might be right behind you, but they would be off to the side of you and or, you know, three or four seats away from you off to the side of you, too. So, you know, you see it and they're spread out pretty well. The closest I think people get is probably in the concession stands. Because you're waiting in line and you try to stay some distance.
Are the concession stands normal? Like if I want to go get a hot dog, I just walk up there and buy one?
Yeah, I just walk up and buy one. I mean, there's some that were more crowded than others. Like the one on the top deck was totally empty. The one I was in the reserve section, the blue section, that was a little more crowded, but nothing I was worried about.
All right, so I turned the game on and it's close. Colorado kept that game close for a while. The same two teams play again tonight. And then a huge series starting tomorrow in San Diego against the Padres, who most people feel are the second best team in baseball. But, Ramon, I never felt like the Dodgers were going to lose that game. And when McKinstry hit the home run late, I don't know if you were still there then.
I stayed the whole game. Come on.
Well, Mason
leaves.
I haven't
been to a game in a year and a half. Right. Of course I'm going to stay the whole game. And what are you trying to do, beat the traffic? There's no traffic.
Right. So when McKinstry hit the home run, I turned it off. I thought, they're not blowing
That's
this
it.
Lead. And then you saw in person Kenley Jansen. How did he look?
He looked great. Look, he walked the first batter, and the fans kind of booed him, which I thought was a little bit harsh. That's a quick boo on your guy who's like your all-time save leader. But something happened to Kenley when he was out there. Two very important things happened. He did not play California Love when he came into the game.
What?
He played Tupac. Yes. He changed his walk-up music. Okay. Then he comes into the game. And first I was like, wait, is that Kenley? It's a different song. And it's there comes Kenley. Then he comes running into the game, walks the first batter. You hear the boos. You go, oh no. Okay. Is this something going to happen? Is he going to blow this? Oh, just a runner on base, you know? Now he comes in and the ball starts dancing, John. It was
really?
Like,
okay. So we've got
a touch of or something. Nope. There was a swing and miss, swing and miss, swing and miss. Nobody was touching him.
All right, here's Kenley. He was asked, why has he been pitching so well in his last two games?
Timing, you know, just have a better timing. It's the feel. It's a feel that I've been searching in for years. It's hard for me to explain. But on the second pitch against Washington, when I have that feeling, I just hold on to it. You know, today I still have it. I feel really good. You know, the first hitter, obviously strike one, you know, that's kind of like unacceptable for me. You know, especially out by two, you know, but anything else is just positive, very positive. You know, when you get in your rhythm, you know, you have your field pitch. That cutter always used to be the field pitch. So when my timing is not right, it's going to be 89. When my timing is good, it's going to be 92, 94. So, yeah, I feel great.
All right. Ramona, they asked him, why did you change your walkout music? Why didn't you play California Love? Here's what he said.
It's a new beginning, man. New beginning. You know, it's time. It's time to just start fresh again.
Wow. So he's done. We're not going to hear California Love anymore.
Yeah, it was a Tupac song.
Well, Tupac's a you're telling me he just changed to a different Tupac song because California Love's a Tupac.
Yeah, hold on. Let me get it. I'll get the exact name of it.
Okay.
For a second.
He later admitted he was pitching angry. They asked him, "If you're pitching angry, who are you angry at?"
Yeah.
Myself. It's Kenley versus Kenley. That's how I see it. It's myself. You know. You just gotta continue to work hard, man. You know, understand that. You know, it's going to be good hitters you're going to face. You know, being in the major league, you're going to face all great hitters. And, you know, the last three outs, it's not the easiest thing to do. So, you know, I'll be doing it for a while. And I'm going to want to continue to get better. That's all I want to do. Every day I come into the ballpark is get better and help my brothers in that locker winning ball games. That's all it is about. You know, we're here to win another championship.
All right, so that was one part of the story. The other thing that was interesting that happened last night is Justin Turner hit a home run early in the game, and they've got these new seats beyond the left field wall.
Yep.
And you can sit there in these seats, and they have a table in front of them, and you can eat. So Turner hit a ball directly into those seats, and a guy was eating a full plate of cheese nachos, and the ball, he tried to catch it, and the ball basically exploded into the nachos and went all over this guy who had a sweatshirt or a jacket on. After the game, Turner was asked if he noticed that he had spilled nachos all over this fan. Here's what JT said.
Hey, Justin, have you ever hit a homer that landed in nacho cheese before, or is this a first?
Yeah, tonight was the first, so that was kind of fun.
So after that, though, the fan, Spectrum, or Sportsnet LA, did a really good job of, like, covering that story, the nacho story. And so they had a reporter go out there and ask the fan what happened. And the reporter said, I noticed you have a new plate of nachos. He goes, yeah, they just showed up. Somebody said Turner sent them. So Turner was asked about that. Is he the one that sent the guy new nachos? Here's JT.
Yeah, I saw it kind of splatter up. And then when they went to look at it and showed the replay, I saw that it was nachos. So I came up in the clubhouse and asked Javi if he can run that guy out a new tray of nachos.
How great is that?
So I'll tell you this. That was very fun for us fans to watch because they showed the guy on the big screen. So they showed this replay. And not only did they replay just so we could all see him get hit by the nachos, the umpires had to review whether it was a home run or not, okay? Because he's sitting in those seats right by the fence. You can see his nachos right on top of the fence. So the ball comes in, and he actually caught the ball. So he sort of abandoned the nachos in order to catch the ball.
He sacrificed
the nachos for the ball.
Well, the Dodgers, awesome. The Dodgers were really smart. They not only gave JT sent the guy new nachos.
Yeah.
And then somebody at the Dodgers was paying attention because they said, oh, this is going to go viral. Let's get this guy a new Dodgers sweatshirt.
Yeah.
So since the first one was completely trashed with all the cheese all over him, they went back and gave him a new sweatshirt. So it turned out to be this great feel-good story.
It was
awesome. Good for the Dodgers for capitalizing on that moment.
Can I tell you how much I love baseball, John? Just like talking about this makes me happy. Can you just taste the nachos? Like, I can't even tell you how good that beer tasted last night. A Dodger dog and beer, and then the guy with the nachos. Go to the ballpark. If you can go get tickets, it's not that hard. Just go on the Dodgers website. You can buy them on the MLB site. Not that hard. Go.
All right. Coming up next.
It makes you happy.
Radio Tinder. Lindsay's got a bunch of stuff for us. We'll tackle that. Ramona in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right. We do this every day. Lindsay has things she wants us to react to. Lindsay, what do you got?
All right, guys. Sad news came out yesterday. It's official. J-Lo and A-Rod have finally called it quits.
Shocking.
But after endless rumors, you know, this time it's actually for real. They announced the end of their engagement and they released a joint statement, which reads in part, "We have realized we are better as friends and look forward to remaining so. We'll continue to work together and support each other on our shared businesses and projects." But A-Rod doesn't seem to be taking this split so well because last night he posted an Instagram story of him lovingly panning over photos from the couple's relationship. He tagged J-Lo in a blue heart at the bottom of the video, and he ended the clip by settling in on a photo of a heart they carved in the sand on the beach with Jennifer plus Alex written inside, all while Coldplay's ballad Fix You plays in the background. Do you think that A-Rod's post is genuine, or do you think he's just looking for public sympathy? Swipe left or swipe right?
Well, isn't the breakup based on the fact that A-Rod cheated?
That's what they say. Well, I guess, you know,
with some reality show star. It appears to me that Alex is very image conscious. I actually like A-Rod on TV. I think he's a good baseball analyst. I think that he's a fun personality. You will make fun of himself. But it sounds like that he likes to play the field. And I think if he does, he should go back to playing the field. I think he probably did it for branding. What do you think, Ramona?
I don't buy it. I think he's really good at the social media and knows that it's time, you know, that'll get picked up. And I think this has been over for a while now. That they just finally got their act together and put a statement out. I mean, I think it was reported maybe a month ago, and then they put out a statement.
Well, they said they were working on it. Yeah.
And I was like, you just kind of haven't got it together and put a statement out. You're not ready to announce this yet. Yeah.
So, other question.
I think it's just for show.
She apparently has not yet given back the $2 million ring. Does she need to give back the ring?
I always think the answer to this particular question is yes. If I, Lindsay, if you and I are dating and I buy you an engagement ring and for whatever reason the engagement is off, the ring no longer is valid. And since I paid for it, you should give it back to me. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I honestly think it depends on the situation, because if the guy is in the wrong, I think the girl, like if they broke up because he cheated on her, I think the girl should be able to keep the ring.
It's true, and do whatever they want with it. Yeah. Okay. I actually think it is situational, John. I actually think it's a lot of guys propose with like a family heirloom, like their grandmother's ring, right, or their mom's ring. I think you got to give the family ring back.
Yeah.
You know, like you can't no keep somebody what. Else's family heirloom. But if somebody just went to Zales and bought you something, I don't know.
What if the family heirloom is super expensive?
Oh, you
give it back.
You
got
to give
no
the
matter
family
what.
Heirloom back. Yeah. But if it's something like, just went down to the Diamond District and put a ring on a, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know.
With okay, Zales,
question,
like Shaq.
My question is this. What are you guys going to do with the ring if you guys don't return it?
Oh, pawn it.
Sell it. Yeah.
Sell it.
Yeah.
I'd just rather get my money back.
You're right. George, I think we're entitled to it.
Come on. But if
I mean, it also, as to Lindsay's point, it depends on why you broke up, too.
Yeah.
Like,
if you
what
cheated,
if it's the dude who broke up or he cheated or whatever.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, next one. So Baylor held a parade earlier in the week to celebrate the Bears' national championship-winning basketball team, and local car dealer Ted Teague showed off a Baylor-themed Jeep, offering the vehicle to head coach Scott Drew. Teague was then interviewed by a local TV station, and what he said about the car, more specifically what he thought it could be used for, has made headlines. Here is what he said.
We rustled up this Jeep Wrangler. We lifted it up, wheels and tires, put a nice little wrap on it so Coach Scott can enjoy it and go use it to recruit, pull some people out of the hood.
Wait, so, what was that last part?
He said he would use it to recruit and pull some people out of the hood. So as you would expect, Teague's comments have made the rounds on social media, and thousands of people are like sounding off against this guy and his business. Baylor released a statement afterwards, letting people know that they would not be accepting the Jeep and that his, quote, remarks do not align with our institutional values or the culture of our athletic programs. Teague then later issued an apology statement saying, as the word came out of my mouth, I instantly knew it was the absolute wrong word. So, have you guys ever said something that you totally regret live on TV or radio? Swipe left or swipe right?
How long you got?
Dan, you know what?
Give me your best
Since
one.
Since you asked me a yes or no question, I'm going to say yes.
I have too many to count. They used at the station, they used to keep a blooper reel, and I would give them new material every month.
Oh my God.
I remember one of my last ones before I left was I was reading a golf highlight and I was going fast.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to say, at the start of the round today, Tiger Woods had a 6-shot lead. Try and say 6-shot lead.
Nope.
5 times fast.
Yeah, I know what happened with that. Out.
Yep. Okay, I'm going to do so. I'll give two answers to this, okay? The first answer is that when I was first starting in radio, I've always had this quality about me that like I'm a little naive sometimes when it comes to things that are of a romantic or a sexual nature.
Okay.
So I just had this like bad habit of saying, it wasn't even habit. I didn't even know that this was like a term for something that is really not something you should talk about on the radio. Okay. So, like it just kept happening to me. It was a certain type of necklace. Okay. And I didn't know. And all of a sudden Mark Miller starts laughing up. I was like, what? I mean, it's just, I got this over when I was traveling this necklace. I'm not even gonna say it again, 'cause you're going to laugh again, but you probably know what it is, Lindsay.
Yep.
Okay. And I just kept saying it over and over and they just kept laughing more and more. And I had no idea why they were laughing at me. And then of course, later on, I checked my Twitter feed and learned, yep, I stepped in that one. Okay. And then the other one was last year when I was on The Jump. I was doing a segment with Paul Pierce and I was trying to explain the concept of, you know, in MVP votes, a lot of times people vote kind of based on the narrative. And I was trying to explain to Paul, like, why I voted for LeBron. And I just phrased it in a really stupid way. Like I said, you know, you're kind of more of a narrative based voter, Paul. That's why you think, you know, that's why you want to vote for LeBron here. And I go, look, I'm more of a narrative-based voter. I'm swayed by narratives, too. I said, I'm more of a narrative-based voter. Oh, my God. I can't check on Twitter anymore without seeing and people just reply to me all the time. Okay, narrative-based voter. Like,
that's a buzzword. Really,
yeah, it's just – it's all I ever say. It's all I ever see on Twitter now. Like, it's just it, – and I was like, I really didn't say that well. Like, I look, I am somebody who is swayed by, okay – It's terrible. Like, there's nothing you can say. Like, that was the worst phrasing I could have come up with. But, you know, you're live on TV. You say stupid things sometimes. Like, it's great.
Alas.
Thanks for asking that one. I'm sure I'm not going to see that.
I'm glad that you shared.
For a while. Yeah.
I'm glad that you shared your narrative. Chest. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Lindsay, you got one more?
Last one here. Earlier this week, I noticed a funny prompt trending on Twitter and wanted to get your guys' thoughts on it. The prompt was, what's the most awkward date y'all have ever been on? Some of the best responses were, this one says, dated a girl who owned a python. One time she asked me to take her to the pet store where she bought a couple white mice, smashed them against the ground, then fed the dying mice to the snake because it was too lazy to eat them if they were uninjured. That was about it for us. Mm. And the next one said, his family owned / ran a funeral home. Did not have an issue with that. But he spent the latter part of the dinner telling me what kind of makeup techniques he would use on me when I died. So, what's the most awkward date you guys have ever been on?
John, you want to go first?
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Most awkward date. Mine was like one of those where I wasn't sure the whole time if it was a date or not. It was like this guy, it was my freshman year in college. I don't want to say his name because he was a really nice guy. And he was senior, and we had this, like, we used to do boat dances. And so it was like they'd rent a boat in the San Francisco Bay, and then you'd have like a dance on the boat or something. And I was just like totally blown away that this guy asked me out. I had no idea that he liked me or anything like that. But like the whole night, he was so shy. He never made a move. Like, it was just, I said, yes. I was like, wow, I was kind of like blown away that you asked me, but okay. And like the whole night, it was just super nerdy Stanford guy, like not quite sure how to, like, you got up the guts to ask me out, but like really didn't know what to do. So yeah, it's not a great answer for that. I don't have anywhere.
Okay.
To
so I
putting makeup on me after I die.
But, I had to think of whether or not I was going to tell this story, but I think I can tell it because nothing happened.
Okay.
When I was in high school, was the summer before I left for college. So I was 17. A couple of friends of mine met some girls at the beach, and we were all talking about going out to the movies tonight. And there were four of us, and there were three of them. And my friends all kind of paired off with the other three girls, so I was the odd one out. Uh-huh. And one of the girls said, oh, I'll bring my sister. She's really fun. You guys will like her. So we're all going out, and this girl looks a little young, but we're just going out to, like, we went out to dinner to like a TGI Fridays, and we went to the movies. We weren't doing anything heavy. So I said, what high school do you go to? And there was this silence.
Oh,
and
no.
And she looked at her sister, and she looked back. I go, are you not in high school? She goes, no. And I go, what grade are you? And she goes, I'm in junior high.
And I said, how old
are you? And she goes, I just turned 13. And I didn't talk to her like the whole rest of the night. We just went to the movies, ended it. And I'm like, am I in trouble here? What did I do? How did this happen?
But
none of the girls owned up to it. You know, it was like, I'm 13. I'm like, okay, time to end it.
Yeah, so nowadays.
Who's this friend of yours who said, I'll bring my sister? She's really fun.
We had just met those girls.
Oh,
so where I grew up, everybody goes to the beach during the summer. You hang out at the beach all day, and then you just go out that night. So we're all talking. There was some good movie out, and we were all talking about going to see this movie.
You couldn't tell she was 13?
No.
What?
That can happen sometimes. Yeah.
No.
Michael, I'm going to tell you a lot of ways. Secret here.
What's the secret, Lindsay?
Every girl, when they're, you know, teenage 13, 14, 15, every girl lies about their age and pretends that they're older than they are because of a boy they like. Every single girl. So even if you couldn't tell, she could have lied and there we are.
But at least she told me the truth, so I didn't get any more trouble. So that
13 is a long way from 17.
Right.
It just kind of depends on when, you know.
you know, especially when I was getting out of high school and going on my way to college, and she wasn't in high school yet.
You weren't very prescient, were you?
Yeah, no, no, that is true. I lacked prescience. That is very true. All right, that's it for Radio
Thanks
Tinder.
Thanks for making me relive that, Linz. I really appreciate that. Really going to enjoy that.
Coming up next, there are two things happening in college sports that could change the sports world forever. We'll tell you what those are. Also, an unexpected retirement in the NBA today that could affect the playoff picture. We'll get into that. Ramona Informace, I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN.